Prepare to Pivot is a series of conversations with Dr. Andrew Barnes, Dean of the School of the Arts, Communications, and Global Studies at York College of Pennsylvania. Dean Barnes talks with leaders in the college, YCP alums, and members of the York community about the importance of the liberal arts in preparing students to build careers where essential skills like critical and creative thinking, effective communications, and analytical reasoning make all the difference. And now, here's Dean Barnes.
Hi, this is Andy Barnes, and welcome back to Prepare to Pivot. Today, I have a very special guest, Kelly Gibson, who is the president of the Cultural Alliance of York County. She's also a York College alum, majoring in English. Yay, English. We love English.
Go Spartans. I use English every day.
Before we do that, you know, this podcast is really about the ways in which the liberal arts prepare people for life, for different kinds of jobs. It doesn't mean that, you know, people think if you get an English degree, you're going to be an English teacher. And Right. Some are great. Awesome. But if you get an English degree or any liberal arts degree, it really prepares you to be out in the world and to have different kinds of jobs and pivot and allows you to kind of pivot. Can you tell me first, before we get into your story, why did you choose English and how did it prepare you for what you do today?
Well, I chose it because I've always had a love of language. It's always been my strongest suit. I write. I love to tell stories and to share unusual stories. I think where my degree really helped me is, and I've talked to former and future York College students about this very thing, your real talent shines when you're telling a story you don't necessarily want to tell, right? So you're writing about a subject that maybe is not a passion piece for you. How do you dig out the same kind of story, the same pieces, if it's not something that is truly loved by you, right? So I think being an English major, especially for me, made me a generalist in the best way. I was just having this conversation that you don't see a lot of generalists anymore. People who can sort of pick up and do what they need to do to get jobs done, right? As we say in the nonprofit world, other duties as assigned. Everybody can be a director because there's three of you and someone's got to change the toilet paper, so other duties as assigned. But being a generalist means that you can really pick up a lot of nuance and things and pivot when you need to in a particular position.
That's interesting because we know a lot of industry leaders, business leaders, presidents of organizations, they come from the liberal arts.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's because of this, they have abilities beyond that skill set needed to do that particular job.
As they say, stretching your toolbox.
Stretching your toolbox. And that's what we can do as liberal arts people. So I'm super happy that we have another liberal arts person here. I didn't know that. So
absolutely.
What a great surprise for me today.
Yes. And you know, I think when I graduated, knowing that I wanted to go into, you know, maybe education, but I wasn't 100% sure. Mm-hmm. So, you know, graduating with an English degree allowed me to just get out in the world and start working. I was working my way through school anyway, so I had that skill set. So I also am a really fast typer. I'm a 70 word per minute typer. I just tested a little while ago.
Did you really?
I still have my chops, and I do. but that allowed me to go into administrative work. And that, you want to talk about a generalist. You want to know how to fix a copier, where the coffee's located, where the keys to the office are, and who knows who. That's your generalist right there. And that opened whole
you know,
world.
That's interesting because when I think you know this, that I graduated with an accounting degree.
Ugh. Yeah.
And I didn't want to do this. But when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do, because I had really good typing skills, I had really good communication skills and writing skills, yep, I could get a job. I moved around. I could get a job anywhere.
Absolutely.
As an administrative assistant.
That's right.
And so I could do typing. I could do all these things. Mm-hmm. Hence the reason I understand the value, right, of our administrative assistants who really kind of run the show.
Absolutely.
But it was those skills that I got from the liberal arts in my education that allowed me to do that,
yep,
to go anywhere to do these kind of jobs until I kind of found what I wanted to do.
Absolutely. Same.
And they sort of, they fueled me. So, okay. So you graduate from here and then, yep, what was your first jobs out of college?
So my first real job was I worked for a manufacturer of large-scale steel annealed furnaces outside of Philly. Mm-hmm. So I moved back home. I'm from New Jersey, moved back home, commuted there for a while. But my love of York was strong, and then I fell in love with a Yorker who I met right before I moved back home. So I came back to York, without a plan or a job, I started temping, you know, mm-hmm. so again, really strong skills. So I temped and kind of moved around and got a job in Baltimore, Washington Insulation, BWI. You've ever seen the movie Joe versus the Volcano?
Oh, yeah.
Joe works at sort of the same kind of facility, and he's inside a cage in the middle of a warehouse floor. Same. My desk was inside a cage on the warehouse floor where I put their marketing materials together. So that was my first wow. sort of foray into marketing and communication. And, you know, commuted down to Cockeysville, where they were located, mm-hmm. and then got an opportunity to get a job here in York with, it's now Fulton Bank, was it, you know, banks change names a lot, but it's Fulton Bank now. And the beauty about working in administration with a bank is they're very community oriented, so they mm-hmm. encouraged me to volunteer. So I got very involved in the community. I was one of the founding members of the York Young Professionals. At the time, York was really moving and shaking. This is like 1999. And I then also started volunteering for both Main Street York, which is downtown Ake now, and a small arts gallery called York Arts, which is now Creative York. And that what led me to a job, the first ever director of marketing and fundraising at York Arts. So I got right into the art world and really immersed myself in that. And it was beautiful. It was wonderful to see their programming. But that's the first introduction I had to the Cultural Alliance. This is different now, but back then in the winter time, we called that the lean time. So between January and April, we really didn't have a lot of classes happening. It was a very tough time for fundraising. We had a big event that happened in April, but until that time, I would watch my boss put his check in his desk and not cash it just to make sure the rest of the payroll would happen. The only funding that came in was an allocation for operations from the Cultural Alliance, who at that time had just been created. It was created in 1999. So this is like 2000, 2001, mm-hmm. pretty early days. And I thought, my gosh, what would we do without them? Mm-hmm. What would we do if we didn't have that allocation? And so even after I stepped away from York Arts and I moved on to working all the large scale special events in the city of York. So I ran New Year's Eve, I ran Mother's Day Street Fair, all those big things. I continued to volunteer for the Cultural Alliance because I knew it was important. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so you've been a part of the Cultural Alliance for a long time. Before mm-hmm. your present position.
Yep,
there.
As a volunteer. So, you know, because it relies on volunteers to raise up dollars and then it grants those dollars out to arts and culture organizations. Many think of it sort of as a United Way general ask, that community chest for arts and culture. And so, you know, I stayed in touch and volunteered my time. And as I moved to different, you know, accelerated leadership positions. And then, you know, one day I got the call from Marianne Winkleman at the Cultural Alliance that said, you know, we've been involved for a long time with you. You've done some really great things out in the world. It's time for you to come on the team, and we want you to be our director of communication and engagement, which they never had before. Mm. And so that happened in 2013.
So you touched a little bit about the Cultural Alliance, that it is like a United Way. It gives money to arts organizations in New York. Can you talk just a little bit more about the mission of
sure.
Cultural Alliance?
So the mission is really, for us, we see ourselves playing three critical roles for the arts community and our community at large. We're the advocate, we're the convener, and the steward, right? There has to be one voice that advocates for all the arts and culture community. And that's including working artists, that's including the very smallest of our arts groups. Because very large-scale arts groups, your performing arts centers around the county, they have the resources to advocate. But not all of our groups do. And so our job is to be, I always tell our arts community, I'm in the spaces and places you can or won't, right? So, you know, we're at Economic Development Club meetings and we're talking about the impact on our economy. We're talking about the impact on healthcare with our primary healthcare providers and really kind of pushing the arts as a solution to a lot of our community problems. And then, you know, convening them together, that's something that we hear all the time. I'm the only United Arts Fund in all of central Pennsylvania.
Wow.
There's only, you know, Erie has one and Philly has one and Pittsburgh has one of us, but that's about it. And funders who are county or statewide will say there's a difference when there's one of you and when there's not one of you, because they don't get together. They don't share resources. They don't, you know, best practices was huge during COVID. What are you guys doing to mitigate? Are you open? Are you not? And sharing things back and forth was like a big piece. And we act as that sort of convener of the community and listen to what they need. And then stewarding those resources as best as we can, right? How do we fairly and equitably get these dollars into the hands of those doing the good work and make sure that their missions are met? And a thing that is very, very important, we really have held on to since we were created in 1999, not everybody has, is we are an operational funder. You know, we are not going to dictate where those dollars go. You need to get a new roof, get a new roof. You need to pay staff, whatever that organization
needs. That's unusual.
It is. And unfortunately, pre-COVID, a lot of organizations had switched to more focus-based funding or program-based funding. But then what happened was when COVID hit, where was the need? The need was operations. Because not, you know, you build this house of cards of grants and sponsorships and things to pay for the actual people. Well, once all those things go away, where's your funding streams come from for your people?
So, you know, I was you wrote an article for the York Daily Record a couple months ago, just 2 months ago, really.
Yeah.
And talking about the history of art and art funding and the need for art funding here in York. And the article is really talking about there was a report, the Ruskin?
The Rusk Report.
The
David Rusk. Yeah.
Right.
There was a popular time around the early 2000s. Where consultants like David Rusk and Richard Florida were going to cities, big and small, and saying, this is the recipe you need to kind of bulk up your community. And again, most of us in the Rust Belt, this was our issue, is the manufacturing strong arm that we had started to dissipate, right? We lost Caterpillar around that time. And we're trying to scramble and think of, well, what's the future hold for our Rust Belt community? And one of Rusk's recommendations was, you are too reliant on that big powerhouse of manufacturing. Mm. You need a more nimble, more flexible class, and that's the creative class. You need to build that muscle up.
But the county, I guess the government didn't kind of step up to fund this. And this is I'm new to York, you know, and I'm surprised by this, that there's not a lot of government support.
Correct.
Almost none. Government support. So it really is, it rests on your shoulders, people like you to fund and other funders to fund the arts here.
Yes.
Why is that?
That's a great question. I think part of it has to do with the generosity of our private sector and the fact that we had such a civic-minded local economy. So if you think about some of the largest industries in our community, most places in the 90s, early 90s and late 2000s saw this sort of all these local companies selling off, right? And ownership becoming not local. And that we're just starting to experience that in a real way in the past, I'd say 5 years, right? So big juggernauts of funding and support and community-based organizations selling off to, you know, private equity firms and these other things where that local support sort of disappears. Now, many of our companies have formed foundations. And so a private foundation piece in York is very important, almost taking a lot of that lift on, but it can't be sustained forever. So we kind of like to say that York's about 10 to 15 years behind, fill in the blank, 10 to 15 years behind on fashion, 10 to 15 years behind on, you know, funding. So,
but I'm really amazed when I came here, the generosity of community leaders.
Oh, huge.
It's huge. For this size town or city, I was really surprised by that.
And I would say individuals, if you're born and raised in York, you give back, you volunteer, you give your time, your talent, and your treasure. It is just what you do.
I think that's really special about York that I haven't seen elsewhere, that the involvement that people, the community is willing to give of their time and their money to support here, to support activities here. So let's talk a little bit about, in general, or maybe specific to York, why is art and culture important to a city?
I mean, it's part of who we are in our DNA. I think that's why I'm so passionate about, I think there's also an innate pride that you take when you know your dollars are going towards that, the DNA of your community. Mm-hmm. So, right, I think when you go to a town, big or small, that's the other thing is I think people think you have to be a certain size city. You have to have certain amenities for these things to be part of your life. And you really don't. We recently did a joint study with the York County Economic Alliance to look at both the cultural community and assets and the outdoor community and assets, two things that are hugely important to people where they live. And, you know, places that are more conservative than us, more rural than us, that have less annual income, whose houses are worth less, they have more funding and support for those two things, what we called quality of place assets, outdoor and cultural, because the people want it, need it, love it, and they support it publicly with some of their own dollars. And there becomes this cohesion in it, right? So what is unique about York? What are the cultural amenities that are unique to us? What are the experiences you come here to have that are unique to us? And the other thing that I think I can say, just because I've had people come in from different places for consulting with our artist groups, there is something about York that creatives just love it here.
I was amazed by this.
Such a deep bench of creatives that live here. They don't always, a lot of us don't know that they're here because their work doesn't show here. So you've got, you know, world touring artists and like musicians who, you know, hang out and you meet them, you see them on the street corner, but they're going to Budapest tomorrow and you just don't know that, you know, and dancers, same. It's just an easy place to live and call home. And, but you know, the better you get, the more your work travels away. Yeah. But the important thing we've realized too is, you know, there was a time, especially in the 90s and 2000s, where we thought, maybe we should be Paducah, Kentucky, right? Maybe we should set up this village and have artists come and then we can have people come to buy their art. I think what's more important is to treat our artists as, you know, important business economy and enable them to do whatever they want to do with their work, but live and stay here, because that's where the money comes back to, right? So you want to do a gallery show in Washington, D.C.? Great. How do we help you get yourself there, because all those sales come back to us.
I think that I was really amazed by this. You know that I'm a weaver, and I came here and I heard so many people think, oh yeah, there's millions of weavers out here.
Yeah.
There's a lot of these craftspeople and artists around here. And I think that's part of it. It's incredibly affordable here.
Yes.
There's a nice scene downtown.
Right.
So that if you're an artist, you can go down there and you can, you know, I go to, well, we have Market View Arts downtown that we can go to. But I was amazed by it. And I think it is that. I think it's an affordable, comfortable place for artists to live.
Yeah.
And it's not like, you know, in New York City where I came from, you know, artists would come in, the creative class would come in, revitalize a neighborhood, and then get pushed out by gentrification. Yeah. And now there's hardly any sort of craftsman people or cultural class in the city proper. They all moved out. But it's different here.
Well, and it's also very, if you look at a map of where our creatives are located, it's very much spread out. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a concentration in our downtown, but actually a lot of them live out in the county and in smaller municipalities. And that's even more important because they contribute to their local governments directly.
Right.
So Wrightsville and Dillsburg, Hanover and Spring Grove and New Freedom have nice pockets of creatives who like that space. They love living there. But they're also very collaborative. That's the other thing that's really important that people tell me over and over about that York that's unique. It's so collaborative here. You see musicians working with visual artists, working with poets. Like, it's just collaborative and good to be.
Well, I think that's the other spirit of York, really, in the county, is that people are really willing to collaborate, are willing to have conversations with other people, or not, you know, don't sort of create these cliques where, you can only, it's an incredibly friendly place.
Yeah.
And I've been also surprised by that because I'm a jaded New Yorker and I'm surprised we don't have that in New York. Well, let's talk just a few minutes about what you see as the future of art and culture in the county.
I think, you know, really keeping our eye on growth that is intentional and really equitable. That's the thing that I do worry about, you know. I've had these conversations with folks where they're like, oh, I miss the 90s, where we could go to abandoned buildings and do rogue shows and nobody knew about it. And I'm like, yeah, but that wasn't safe. And you know, you can't have it both ways. You can't have like strong support systems and also, you know, breaking and entering. Like, it just...
we don't encourage that.
We don't encourage that. You know, a great encapsulation of the York story is Skid Row Garage, right? So Skid Row Garage hosted punk shows. And I'm talking like national touring acts in a garage in the back of MC Heiser, who's the founder, and in his house. He's in a great band. Shout out to Old Tiger. And he was touring and he's like, I'll throw some shows in my garage. And then, you know, took 10 years, but he got caught, right, having these non-legal shows. Mm-hmm. And now he has an open public venue downtown, you know, raised the dollars and now it's open. And it's an all ages show. All ages shows are so rare.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Speaking of a parent of a 13 and 15 year old punk fans, real rare to find a show they can see that's not 21 plus.
Yeah,
and so think about that, how many, and that's how he grew up. He would go to places that were downtown that were all ages shows. And so he wanted to make that possible here again. So like, we have a space where someone has an idea, like MC, people come in and help them with that idea, and then they make that idea a reality. My hope is that even as we grow, even as we build support systems and funding, and even, you know, I can very much envision artist housing that's a specific target, you know, in our area. Let's not lose that mm-hmm. magical, if you have an idea, people will roll up their sleeves and help you with that idea. And, you know, that's my worry is we get sort of bogged down into, you know, gentrification and other things that stop those things from being possible anymore.
I think that's incredibly astute. I think that is sort of the trap that we can fall into when we sort of grow as a community,
right.
That we lose that kind of entrepreneurial spirit, right. That kind of creative chaos.
Creative chaos, absolutely.
That funds a lot of this. So that's fuels a lot of this.
And
that's
absolutely great.
Kelly, thank you for coming today. I'm so happy you're here. I look forward to this conversation, and I'm looking forward to working with you.
And welcome to York. We're happy to have you.
Thank you.
This program is produced in the studios of WVYC-FM, the voice of York College, and produced by WVYC radio station manager Jeffrey Schiffman. Join Dean Barnes monthly for these ongoing conversations about essential skills in the liberal arts.